Hi and welcome back. Presumably you're back, we're back. So we've had fantastic lunch here. So we're off to do what every good educator would do, which is to make sure that before we go to second base, we've got first base covered. So we're going to quickly recap that first couple of hours by asking people in the room what they learned. Those of you at home, type into the chat box one outstanding concept from what we did before, because that locks it into your brain, and when we share it, it locks it into everybody's brain. So it's kind of like a way of multiplying our impact. So think about that. We're going to go to people in the room. So who wants to start? One thing from before we stopped, Ange?
So intentions will get us what we really want, whereas goals actually really keep us unhappy.
Bingo. And it's not necessarily they keep us unhappy, but as soon as you reach the goal, you start thinking about the next level or the next one or the whatever. So I don't know if it's they keep us unhappy, but they keep us in suspension and they kind of delay happiness from the point of view of, you know, if we're saying that's going to make us happy, that's actually the problem with that. Therefore, we kind of need a bit of a divorce from the attachment to the goals and understand that you get what you really want if you go for the intentions anyway. You can become the person that you want to be. The happiest you're going to be with yourself is when you're living according to your values and your beliefs and your morals and your standards. You're actually producing day to day the person that you want to be. That's when you're going to be really happy. The greatest success that you're going to have with goals is when you do the thing that you thought you couldn't do. So the people with the fear of heights, when they jump off the bungee jumper or that kind of thing, they're excited not because of the bungee jumping, but because they overcame themselves. So the big victories, goal-wise, are the internal ones anyway. Thanks for that, Ange. So remember at home, you can type your insights in as well. That's a pretty cool one. Let's go to the next one. Somebody else in the room?
The goals thing, I really, something about enjoying, well, not necessarily just enjoying, but if you have a goal, it's the stuff beforehand as well. Like you're already achieving things or feeling things before you get to that goal. Like for me, that's personally something I didn't realize I had been doing with one thing. Yeah. And if I can apply that to other things, then it's not necessarily just about the future goal because I've been enjoying the process.
Yeah, because if you allow yourself into the process, then you're not delaying everything until you...
Until that last thing.
Until that last thing, that last, what is it, last square peg in the hole goes in or whatever it is. Yeah, so it allows us to enjoy the process because really that's closer to intentions anyway. Because the big thing about intentions is that at what point do intentions start to deliver? Well, it's as soon as you form it. I remember, I didn't know what I was doing, but I remember I used to show people my goal book. And so I remember at one point when maybe Jules was 3 or 4 years old, so maybe 30 years ago, I had a goal book or one of the pages in my goal book said to be the best husband and father I can be. And I looked at that and I thought, I think I'm giving that a tick now because I was doing the best I could. So really a lot of it's about being who you want to be. Okay, something else from before? Ready?
Understanding the keystone habits and that if you can focus on those, then the other habits will be easier.
Yeah. Keystone habits make all the others easier to absorb because they set you up so that you're rolling, so that your mindset's great, so that your beliefs, attitudes, approaches, biases, all those sort of things are set up so that the next level's easier to absorb. So keystone habits, a new concept. I hadn't heard of that 6 weeks ago. Somebody else?
I like the idea of the risk-taking. And
risk-taking?
The consequences of that, in that you're going to fail more, but that makes you a more rounded person. You have more experience and wisdom.
Yeah, because you are going to fail more. Not fail a bigger percentage. So your win and lose rate's probably going to be, over the period of your life, it'll be a constant sort of a win-lose rate. So numerically, there will be more failures. But what most people do is they go, okay, so minimizing failures means that I've got all successes. So what they do is they minimize failures. What are they minimizing as well as failures? Experiences and learning. So, you know, you might be 2 or 3 failures away from living the life of your dreams. If you're not willing to experience those failures, then the life of your dreams is not available to you. Whether that's relationship-wise, whether that's health-wise, whether that's whatever, it doesn't really matter. Okay, any one more?
that monkey chatter going on in your head and just be in stillness so that intentions can actually be seen come through.
Because otherwise what you do is you think intentions up, and that makes them as bad as a goal. The real problem with a goal is we go, I think this will make me happy. Whereas an intention, if you search deeply within, then the chances are that what will really make you happy is going to emerge for you, get an understanding about what that is, and then you can set about going towards that. In fact, we're looking at that. You know, your example of travelling, when are you leaving the country, by the way?
Possibly July.
So even the departure date is a bit open.
Yeah, because I heard of a 3-day workshop that I really want to be at in September. And that's like, oh, can I delay it to them? But definitely I'm going by mid-September because I have one leg of the journey, the 1 week section of it planned. That's it.
Cool. So I was getting my hopes up that that was a 3-day workshop that I was running, but it sounds like no.
Don't know what that one is yet.
So we were using that as an example of how you can live intentionally, and it's probably easier to live intentionally when you're not at home. That and travel is a good example of how you can kind of let go of all these things that are the cage that kind of encapsulate you because of identity and process and all that sort of gear. Okay, ready to move on? Rightio. So we've got another bunch of questions. So get your pens and paper ready. We're going to do some more 1 to 10s. So these bunch of questions. Pretty much what we've got to look at is, are there some attitudes which are ego-based that would be good for us to get rid of? Once again, what you'll see here in the purple round thing, I'm not a pheasant plucker, I'm a pheasant plucker's son. I'm only plucking pheasants till the pheasant plucker comes. That one. So what we're really talking about is how you come from a more spiritual base as you approach what it is you'd like to do with your life, because the chances are that if you come from a more spiritual angle, you're much more likely to deliver what it is that you want and what's going to go beyond happiness and into satisfaction, fulfillment, contentment, and enriched life. And really the question we want to answer is not so much, are you happy? Or when someone says, are you happy? The answer we want to be able to give is, I'm happy with my life. I'm happy the way that I'm living my life. The things I'm doing, the things I'm involved in, I'm happy about that. Rather than, I'm happy because I've got a new car. Because if you're happy because you've got a new car, well, that needs topping up later on. So we need a longer term happiness rather than a short term one. So there are some attitudes that we need to look at. So give yourself a score on how easily you are offended. Now, the stuff in brackets is kind of talking about how you're not diminished by somebody else's attitudes or beliefs. But how easily are you offended? If you're easily offended, high score. If it's difficult to offend you, low score. Give yourself, particularly those of you at home, give yourself a score on this. And we'd love to hear from you about it, where you have got your high scores, like we did with Gary and with Bronwyn before. That would be great. Having given yourself a score on that one, and are you guys scoring each other's on this occasion?
He did just put a higher score.
Uh-huh. These guys are scoring each other because they know each other well, 20 years of being friends, and so it might actually be good to get someone else to give you a score on this. Okay, letting go of your need to win. So, how, you're not a better or more beautiful or more likable person because you had a win. But how much do you need it? So if you can let go of the need to win and be more a participant, then high score. If you don't need to win, low score.
So if you need to win,
yeah, if you need to win, it's a high score. Yep. No, you can't have 11 out of 10.
Yeah, I gave it like a 1 million.
Yeah. Score out of 10, 1 million.
Yeah.
Okay, next one. Can you be wrong? So can you let go of your need to be right? I was brought up by a guy who was always right. My dad was never wrong. I remember saying to my dad when I was about 12 or 14 years old, I said, "How come you're always right?" He said, "Because I am." And, you know, for him, it was very, very difficult when he was wrong. Very, very difficult to admit that he was wrong. If he did, it was kind of whispered out the side of his mouth and the subject got changed really quickly because he needed to be right. It was kind of, it fed his ego that he was okay about. Because to him, being wrong was just the worst sin that you could make. Somehow diminished him. So if you need to be right, give yourself a high score because that's a kind of a bit of an issue. And judgment. So give yourself a score on how judgmental you are. I'll put a note in here saying that, you know, when you are judgmental, what it does, it makes you mean-spirited. It kind of limits you. Judgment's a really nasty thing because it kind of gets you to pin people down and put them in boxes and not meet them how they really are. So judgment, if you're quick to judge, or if you are set in your, like once you've made the judgment, you stick with it. You know, typically that person who once they've made up their mind, you can't shift it. No matter what you say to them, they're not changing their opinion. That's what I mean by rigid in their judgment. Then those are high scores. If you find yourself suspending judgment, if you find yourself judging and then saying to yourself, pull it back, stop that, reassess that. See this person as another child of God. That's an interesting concept because it's an expression I use for myself. I say to myself, stop that. See the humanity in this person. See this person as a child of God, which is hard for me because there's no God. But the expression child of God has meaning for me, meaning perfect and all that sort of stuff. Right, maybe I'll better find a better one. Okay, can you let go of the need to have more? In other words, how much is enough? This is a discussion I have with my friends every now and then. You know, when we talk about wealth creation, the answer is, well, how much is enough? Is it possible that you could have enough and then lose it all? Would you be the first Australian to have made a fortune and lost it? Would you be the first Australian to have been happily married and then divorced? Would you be the first to have been fabulously healthy and then sick as? So there's, we get taught that more is better. And then biggest question of the lot on this page is, can you let go of your identity? Talked about this before the break. Your spirit does not have an identity. That's got to do with, identity's got to do with a fixed place or view or point or time or whatever. So identity's got to do with something that identifies you. But your spirit, whilst you can identify the part of you that is spiritual, it of its own doesn't have a personality or feelings or a name or those kind of things. You exist, and if you've had someone you love die, the chances are that you can still connect with the spirit of that person. So their body died, but maybe they didn't. So can you let go of the identity stuff? This goes a long way. It goes back a long way. You know, very early in your life, you learnt whether you were a boy or a girl. When you hear about people who have identity crisis when it comes to gender, then that's what's really going on, is that I identify more with my body than I really should, and I've got to change it, or it's got to be expressed in a different way or whatever. And that might be very satisfactory for them, but really it's a surface level issue compared to your identity at the spiritual level being something that's much more full and more given. Okay, let's have a look at how you went with that. So those of you at home, you can text us in your highest score. What I'm interested in is your highest score. Why are we interested in your highest score, by the way? Because that's the area where if you address that and you put your effort into it, that's where you're going to get the biggest breakthrough. Last time we went from Scott's end, this time we'll go from Nerida's end. So what did you get your highest score in, Nerida?
How easily that I'm offended.
How easily you're offended, the first one. Uh-huh, cool. What do you reckon you need to do?
Just reframe what people say or... If I'm feeling offended, obviously it's something going on inside and I need to just look at why am I feeling this? What is it that I'm
question,
feeling?
Question, who is offended? Because it'll be your personality. Like it might be your gender, it might be your age, it might be your whatever. There's lots of isms, right? So there's a thing out there at the moment called ageism, which is older people find it harder to get work or get through job interviews. But it could be racism, it could be whatever. So have a look at what's offended and ask yourself, is that where you want to be? And then what would be better? In other words, when someone chops me off in the traffic and I go, bastard, I recognise, okay, that's what's happened. I can't undo that. But what would be better? It would be better if I thought they're in a hurry or they're whatever. How many of you understand that people don't offend you, you take offence? Uh-huh. Why is it good that if you understand that you take offence rather than they are doing it, what's the advantage? What's the upside for that for you?
You can recognize it's brought something up in you that you actually need to address.
Yes, means you control it.
Yep.
Yeah, you have the power instead of giving them the power.
Yes, because when you're offended by them, they've got all the power. When you realize I've taken offense, you have the opportunity to change your mind about that and say to yourself they're entitled to their opinion. That makes sense? It's a fascinating concept to see how what kind of strange lengths we go. Any of you seen in the news this week, there's some dudes in Victoria flying a Nazi flag above their house? Yeah. Well, a lot of people busy being offended. But are those people in that house entitled to their opinion? They are. And really, if we want to be free, we would defend their right to express their opinion. Until it has a negative impact in terms of some damage being done to someone that's more than just opinion. That makes sense? But you'd also have the right to stand outside their house and yell at them. Because if they've got the right to express their opinion, you've got the right to express yours. That makes sense? Part of the problem is that we don't. Part of the problem is we sit back and observe. So how many of you remember the Israel Folau case? Mm-hmm. Okay, so what was how would you summarize that? What happened?
He's spouted stuff from the Bible that he probably genuinely believes, but it was offensive to other people.
It was offensive to other people. I'm going to suggest to all those other people ought to stop being offended. That he should be allowed to say what he likes. But what's your personal response to it? I won't ask you because that's too revealing. It's that too personal. My personal response to that is, I don't believe that shit. And what I need to do is stand up and say, I disagree with you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But I won't because I'm protecting my business because I don't want my business to get dragged into a shit fight with all the trolls and the haters out there. So what I do is I hold back because I look at the cost. I'm imagining this. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So a lot of us, we imagine the cost of going out there with our opinion. But Israel Folau should, if we say, if we make it fair for everyone, well, whatever's fair for him should be fair for, does that make sense?
Yeah.
But what most of us don't do is go and take the risk. What we need to congratulate him about is standing up for what he believes in. But we don't have to join. But we also don't have to be offended. Does that make sense? We could just kind of go, okay, that's what you think, that's what you think, or that's what you feel, or that's what you believe. That's what it is. It doesn't mean I have to join you. It doesn't mean I have to be offended either. What didn't happen was it wasn't a wellspring of people voicing their opinions about it was a whole bunch of people who said, okay, I'm donating money to his defence fund. And that was primarily a kind of like a twisting of the message about freedom of speech and all that sort of stuff. But there wasn't an equal number of people, or even a larger number of people, saying this is madness. Just let him say it and leave it alone. If you're offended by it, you're diverting energy to it rather than...
That's because that's not a sensational thing to hold. It's not much good for the media for people to sit around and say, well, who cares what he thinks? I disagree with him.
That's right.
It doesn't make very good news.
It makes for shit news because what sells as far as news is concerned?
Outrage.
Outrage and drama and all the rest of it, you know, so that's all manufactured. Okay, cool. All right, so I don't know how we got onto that, but let's go. That was yours, Nerida. You clear on what to do? Say it in words so that I know that you got it. This is where coaches get people. These coaches say, okay, here's the solution. But good coaches say, now say it back to me so that I know you understand it.
To not be offended by others is just a matter of thinking, well, that's their opinion. Voice my opinion back is how I see things.
Or to ask yourself, in what way am I diminished? That person's opinion, in what way am I made less of? Kind of goes to what Renee was saying about being concerned about what other people think of us. My question would be is, okay, so in what way does that person's opinion diminish you? And what you'll find is it doesn't. Like, there's no way that I'm diminished by what Israel Folau's got to say.
I also got this little aha. I wasn't allowed as a child really to even speak back at the dinner table.
Yeah, so you weren't
entitled. So I was never allowed to talk.
Never allowed to have an opinion.
Yeah.
Well, probably not allowed to talk, and second rate, if you're going to talk, do it according to these rules and don't have an opinion. Yeah. Pretty strict rules. That's why the travel's going to be good, because you're going to wake up one morning and go, do I go that way or that way? Down that road or down that road? Since there's no agenda, there's only one opinion that matters. But if you're not in the habit of referring to that, what do I want? You can end up sitting there at that junction for quite... you know... This on the surface, this can sound delightful, right? So Mary and I hired a motorbike and rode around Italy for a few weeks. And it was very much like that. Get up, have breakfast, pull out some maps, where do you want to go? One day the answer was nowhere. So we stayed. But we didn't know because we had to talk it out because Mary and I are very used to, what do you want to do, hon? Like, I'm okay, so where do you want to go? Does that make sense? It's kind of like, this can be very simple stuff. What do you want for dinner? Oh, I don't mind. What are you? Like, we could go for an hour on that.
Somebody needs to make a decision.
Somebody make a decision, put us out of our agony. Yep, cool. Okay, so Renee, what came up top for you, mate?
Two did, but I don't know if I really understand the last question, but I'll focus on the one I do, which is letting go of the need to win.
Uh-huh. Yep, how are you going to do that?
I don't know, because I was just sitting here thinking at the moment I'm in, one of my friends overseas set a 7-day fitness challenge,
yep.
And it's against each other, and on my board I have the biggest need to win, and because she lost, because I won,
yep.
She's now set me another 7-1, so I'm like, right, and we are both just...
I've never heard of this.
Smashing it out. Because I have to win. I'm like, I'm not going to lose. So this morning when it was pouring down rain, I was like, damn it. Now, how am I going to get my fitness in today? So I was going for a run this morning. So like, and then as I was driving up here, I'm like, yes, it's starting to stop. When I get home this afternoon, I'm going for a run so that I can win this challenge.
Yeah. And then she's going to set you another one.
Yeah. I don't know. Keep just going.
And yeah.
But, yeah. And I had a bit of a laugh, more beautiful. And that might make me physically look a bit more beautiful because I've just a massive amounts of fitness. but I have always had the need to win.
Yeah. What's it about? What's the driver in the need to win? You guys identify with this. Feel any of you feel free to join the conversation. And those of you at home, the need to win. Gary, if you're still online, when I first met Gary, he was 14 years old playing in a water polo team and I was a coach. And we're still great mates. And that kid had an amazing competitive spirit. So did the other kids in that team. And I discovered, this is 1974, and I discovered these kids were training the house down. That, like, they were at the pool 5:30 in the morning. Why were they training the house down? Because they were in the state knockout competition, and the further they went in that competition, the more time out of class they got. So they had to win, but that was so they could get more time out of class because we had to travel to whatever it was. So what's in it? What do you get from winning?
I feel good. Like, I'm like, yes, I've achieved something. I guess it comes back to that goals thing, but it's
you
like
attention if you win.
Yeah.
Say that again.
You get attention if you win.
Yeah, although I think it's not necessarily about attention for Renee. It's true.
Self-worth.
Yep. Look, winning is the excuse to approve of yourself. What's the one thing we're going through life looking for? Approval. Yeah. I want it from everyone who is willing to give it. And even some who are unwilling, I'll take it off them. I'll buy it. So there we go through life looking for love and acceptance. But if we can't get that, well, at least give me some approval. Right? We love getting signs of approval. And, of course, this particular example, having a win, is a chance to approve of yourself or to acknowledge that you've done well or give yourself a tick. Remember, we all tick the list of to-do things today. It's the excuse to approve yourself. What I'm going to suggest the solution is to approve of yourself and get some fitness in. Rather than get some fitness in to approve of yourself. Just ask about face and you got it. And then you can do the fitness for the fun and the enjoyment and see how she's going with it.
Well, I have been doing a lot of fitness, but I've just ramped it up.
You just ramped it up. Trust me, there's no end to this. I've got to tell you, have you guys heard about me and Bob with the Fitbits?
Yep.
When we first got them? And there I am on the treadmill, holding the laptop on the treadmill at 11:30 at night with the air conditioner on because it's stinking hot outside so that I can get my steps in front of his because my computer will tell me how many steps he's got. And he's walking around his house at the same time. He's in Brisbane and I'm in Canberra. Sorry? And he can see my steps.
What time did you finish?
At some point, one of us gave up. I can't tell who it was, but it was kind of like whoever thought, well, look, it's only 5 till midnight, so then it resets and we start again.
Bob gave up because he realised he would get up at 5 a.m. and you would be asleep till 8, so he knew he had a 3-hour window to get in front of him in the morning.
So he gave up. As soon as I saw his number stop, I thought, oh, okay, I can go to bed. This is madness, right? I'm not staying up because I wanted to. I'm staying up because I have to win.
Brian's asking, does Renee need to actually deliberately lose in order to get a win for herself on her self-worth or not?
Yeah, good question, Bronwyn. You don't have to deliberately lose to get a win for yourself. What you have to do is enjoy the challenge coming from your friend and go, this is funny, we'll just see how it ends up rather than I've got to win. Many things don't deliver until you allow yourself to enjoy. I'll give you a classic example. People who get it with fishing, we got any fishermen in the room? You like going fishing? Yeah. Do you have to catch fish? Now, the reason I can't enjoy fishing, I have to catch fish. Right? So you don't go fishing to catch fish, you go fishing to go fishing because going fishing means going...
It's just meditating, really.
Meditating. Got it? But when I'm focused on... my problem is I'm results-oriented. Your problem is you're results-orientated. Right? The result means everything. I said to Jules one day, she had a harrowing kind of a day. You know, one of those days that just wears you out? She'd had that day and not been able to bank the result. She'd got to the end of something that she was learning or doing or whatever, and it was just a mess. No progress. And she was saying, what do I do? Because the day's gone. I said, honey, you have to value the effort instead of valuing the result. Because if you value the effort, you've had a stupendously fantastic day. You've really put in, you've hung in there, you've demonstrated tenacity and resilience and a whole bunch of great qualities, but you can't recognize them because you're saying, I wanted the result more than I wanted to realize just how hard a worker I am and just how noble my work ethic is. How many of you can see that Jules could have had a great day, really struggling with something that was kind of like up there in terms of difficulty, but hanging in there? Of course, what she felt was the frustration of not winning. But what I saw as an outside observer, and this is a great advantage of not being involved in your own life. You know, the great advantage of a coach or someone like that is that they're not in there with you. And so what I saw was this ability to hang in there no matter how bad it got and keep going and kind of mobilize the resources and get back into it. And every now and then a big sigh of frustration and then just another big take a deep breath and back into the challenge again. So my respect for Jules goes through the roof. Jules' respect for Jules goes through the floor. But we're both looking at the same thing. She's focused on the result. I'm focused on the look at the effort. So look at your effort more than your result, because your effort will not go unrewarded. Eventually, Jules got on top of that thing. Eventually, she had the win. So effort counts more than result. Ange, your top one?
But I think it's letting go of my perceived identity.
Yes. Yep. What's the perceived identity that you need to let go of?
Well, it's an identity that you think that you should be.
That I think you should be?
No, that I think I should be.
Yeah. What do you think you should be? I'm interested.
You understand that
you're probably going to say something that I don't relate to. Because your identity to me doesn't really have much to do with what you do every day. But let's just explore it.
So that, well, as I said, perceived identity of like being like on top of everything all the time.
Yeah.
Having everything go perfectly.
Yeah.
Being able to make everyone happy.
It's like an impossible list, right? If I can do all of that, I'll be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've recently realised that, yeah, I definitely need to let go of that because I can't do it. It's impossible.
It's impossible, and if you could do it, what would you get anyway?
Yeah, you'd be exhausted.
You'd be exhausted, and so now a bunch of people whose opinions doesn't matter approve of you. That's great. Well, you can't eat that. Like, you don't take that to bed and snuggle up to it. So the way that I identify you, when you ring and your name comes up on my phone, I always go, you beauty, and I want to answer it, and because I'm looking forward to an interesting conversation with someone I love and care about, who I see as a magnificent human being taking on a fabulous challenge. I don't care whether you win or not. My identity for you is not that you are successful. I know that you are, financially and in many other ways, but that's not the identity for me. The identity is someone who's willing to go into battle, be vulnerable, tell the truth, wants to grow. So my identity for you is totally different to yours.
Question, or even when I was putting questions in on that last course, I thought, oh God, I hope that's not a stupid question.
We do that. We panic about, once again, that's a version of what will other people think of me. But you know, when clients ring me and they say, oh, you know, I know you're busy, I'm sorry to take up your time, my attitude boils down to this. And this is an optional thing. I think, thank goodness you reached out, because if you didn't reach out, I'm just sitting here twiddling my thumbs all day. Not really. There's other stuff to do, but you understand what I'm getting at? It's kind of like, I can't help until there's help to be done.
Well, that, like, with the question, then I'm just going to say something like, I might be sometimes worried about if that question doesn't fit my identity.
Yes. Yes.
I go, oh, that's a stupid question. That's not my identity. I don't want to be perceived as that.
I don't want to be perceived as that. Once again, we're out there worrying about what everybody else might be thinking. And once again, the answer is just assume that they're judging you. Just assume that the whole pile of people out there that think you're as crazy as they come. It's easier. Right? Just assume that they all reckon you're a nutcase. Then, like, it can't get any worse than that. Except to discover that half the time you're wrong, some of them actually like you or respond to you or whatever it is. That makes sense? Okay. So that's an external identity. What Angie's talking about is an external identity. It's what I do every day, you know, all of those sort of things. An internal identity? Start thinking about that. Courageous woman ready to have a go and tackle things and do things. Here's an interesting thing. What you're doing in your business at the moment is doing things that you don't know how to do. Right? You're inventing things and you're teaching yourself how to do things, but you started before you know what to do. You actually have to find out by doing. Well, that means you're on the edge. That means you're adventurous. It means you're taking risk. Those are ways to identify. Those are good things to identify with. Brave, courageous, vulnerable, open. Don't bother with all the other stuff. Does that make sense? Anything that's external, like I'm Mary's husband, that's external, mate. Thing is, am I working to be the best I can be in the relationship? That's more real and more meaningful. That was Ange. Who's next? Shoot, mate.
Letting go of the need to be right.
Letting go of the need to be right because?
I don't know.
My dad had this. He was,
like,
never wrong.
He's laughing at me because I said to him, like, I can be wrong, I just don't like it.
I just don't like it.
And so when I said that, he goes, it's the same thing. I'm like, it's not the same thing. But it is.
Similar. Let's just see what's coming in the
back. It's also Bronwyn's highest score, so I was just going
to
say.
It's also Bronwyn's highest score. Is the need to be right? Okay, cool. What's the downside of being right?
Someone else has to be wrong.
Someone else has to be wrong, and in a two-person situation, that's a disaster because if you're in a long-term relationship with someone and you're always right, guess what they get to be? My mum spent her life being wrong, and is it any wonder that her self-image took a dive? So my dad, who supposedly loved her, was willing to diminish her over a long period of time. That's just shitful behavior, right? That's bad, bad, bad behavior because of the inability to be wrong, which is ego shit. In other words, if I'm wrong, there's something wrong with me. No, there ain't. You just messed something up. You just mistook something or you just got a different opinion. There's nothing wrong with you because your opinion flies in the face of the public or anybody else or the common wisdom or the whatever it is. But the biggest problem with being right, what's the biggest problem with being right? Aside from the damage you do to others, which it's optional for them to get damaged, by the way. They don't have to be. You don't learn anything. And you're going to end up lonely. Because do people like to be around someone who's always right? No, what we want is fair exchange. Does that make sense? So you don't have to enjoy it, but you have to do it. It's kind of like, you know, you don't have to enjoy going to the gym. But you're a nutcase if you stop going to the gym because you don't like it. Going to the gym is not about do you like it. Going to the gym is about how long do you want to live? I can feel myself getting on a rant there.
Funny thing is, I'm married to a man who is worse at me than that. So I think there's something to be learned in that too, because what drives me mental about him and how I feel I'm obviously then that's happening. We're hitting the ball back and forth, and he's like Scott just commented, like he's leveled on that.
Yeah, so his his need to be right is bigger than yours.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
So then I don't know whether then that's become more of a learnt behaviour too, in order to be able to.
Yeah, you're probably just in competition.
Yeah.
You're probably sick of being wrong.
Yeah.
Because if he's always right, you're always wrong.
And I'm sick of feeling wrong all the time, so now I'm
fighting back
to be right.
So what you're doing is fighting back. The trouble is that's not going to enhance you. So it's going to diminish you because you're taking on an expert, right? As I'm so fond of saying, if Roger Federer is in town, don't play tennis with him, right? Play chess or something, right? Play some other game where you've got a chance. But if you play him at tennis, you're going to get your ass handed to you. So your husband's going to hand your ass to you on a regular basis, right, because he's got more practice. And he's willing to be more extreme and outrageous about it. The trouble is, for you to win, you have to become more extreme and more outrageous.
Yeah.
And is that who you want to be? Now, here's an interesting thing. If being right is what he's good at, it's his only trick. Now, I hate to speak about someone who's not here. I don't want to talk about someone behind their back. But having spent my life with a man as my father who was always right, it was his only trick in the book. What it meant was, when we got beyond that, when we got, look, whether you're right or wrong is irrelevant, what we need to do is sort this out, it was useless. Because there was only one thing you could do, and that was be right about something. So if you want to take him on, don't compete at that level, but you can unravel him like a string anytime you change the basis of the competition. That makes sense? I'll say less about that because it's competitive and all that sort of gear.
Mm.
Scott, highest score?
Oh, it was the need to win.
The need to win? Okay. Very similar to being right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Once again, the need to win is how you give
That's
yourself...
how I get my self-worth. Because I don't have a lot of self-worth. So achieving things, because I'm a bit of a high achiever.
Yep. It's funny, isn't it?
What self-worth I have, that's where it comes from.
Is it? Did you guys hear that? I'm a bit of a high achiever, but my self-worth is in the toilet. But I'm a high achiever. In other words, all of my achievements don't count.
No.
Because I actively undermine them and make them not count. Uh-huh. Might do you good to make a list of your achievements. And just sit with them. And understand, I did that. I did that. Yeah, I did that too. And I did that and I did that.
So I got 2 degrees. I didn't go to either of my graduations. So I'm like, oh, it's not a big deal.
So you didn't go to the graduation?
I achieved a good thing.
And he's talking to me about it. You can imagine my reaction. I was like, let's go and celebrate what you've just flogged yourself doing for the last few years. And he's like, nonchalant.
But while I was doing it, I had to get a good mark.
They had to be the best.
That's right. Have to get the best marks. Got to get the high distinctions and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Look, mate, wearing that gown and wearing that hat is an excuse to drink like a fish.
Yeah.
And you missed it. 5 years and you missed it. All right. So all of this stuff is about detaching from goals. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Rightio. Let's move on. So if you're not your body and you're not your thoughts and you're not your emotions, then who are you? We've kind of talked about this already. You are this spirit or this core or this essence or whatever. If we start to look at what that is and we go to people who might have an opinion based on some level of experience, have any of you heard of the Upanishads? These are the Vedic texts, like the Bible, except for Hindus. And so the Upanishads go back maybe 6,000-7,000 years. As far as I can tell, a couple of thousand years before BC, before Christ. So in the Upanishads, you'll see this set of sentences, which kind of, when you put them together, make a lot of sense. They're saying that who you really are is this collection of desires. That's probably a good way of describing your inner core. It's kind of like, when you think about this, you know, your deepest desires, not so much your kind of goals and targets, but what really matters to you about who you are, that kind of stuff. And what happens is those desires manifest as an intention. Now remember, they're saying this 5,000 years ago. So that intention becomes what you apply yourself to, or where you apply your energy, or as I say here, that is your will. In other words, the expression of your energy. And as is your will, so is your deed. In other words, you end up doing what your will says. So that as your will is, so is your deed, means that your will turns into what you do. And as your deed is, so is your destiny. Does that make sense to you guys? Okay, therefore, what we need to come from is this deepest level of what matters to us. That's what's critically important. So let's have a look at some of the ways of transferring this. So I've bunged up a bunch of possible goals or targets. So some of these are not expressed very well, but I wanted to just get them on the screen so you could work with them. So I want to lose 10 kilos is not what you would put in your goal book. What would you put?
Daily.
Cool. That's more the intentions. Yeah.
So I want to reach my ideal weight of 85 kilos by the December or whatever it is.
In other words, rather than saying what you don't want, you say what you do want. I want to lose 10 kilos. What happens to things that you lose? You find them. Do you want to find it again, or do you just want to? So Scott's got it. What you've got to do is talk about where you want to arrive. A better way to express it, I want to lose 10 kilos, is negative. A positive is, I want to arrive at my target weight of X number of kilos. Want to increase my income by 30% is a positive expression. More time with the kids is a positive expression. A three-wheeled motorbike. Why do I want a motorbike with three wheels? Two at the rear, one at the front. Harder to fall off. That makes sense? Ridden motorbikes for years, and biggest fear is two wheels fall off, three wheels, nah. Okay, so let's have a look at intentions. Really the intention of the weight loss, particularly as I'm experiencing it at the moment, is it's really not about the weight. It's more about the more energy, the sleeping better, the having a sharper brain, a mind that works better, more enthusiasm for life, energy available, that kind of stuff. It's really got nothing to do with how much my body weighs, because if I could have all those things and weigh 90 kilos, I wouldn't care. Got it? Okay. When can I start feeling fitter and healthier? Now, because the very first time I take an action towards that, I can understand that's just one small step in many, etc. The increased income is not really about the money, because money, could we live on what we have and have more spare money by cutting down our expenses?
Yep.
We could. We could live somewhere cheaper to live. We could eat different food. We could do all sorts of things to make sure to make more money available. But really the intention is living more comfortably. That actually means about what we give away and who we support and those kind of things. In our example, it means that. More time with the kids. What's really the intention there? Well, what I'd like to do is deepen the relationship. We've got a three-year-old granddaughter who I want to know better, and who I want to be a presence in her life over long. I want her being able to look back when she's 20 and say, "Granddad was one of the best dudes ever." Does that make sense? Rightio. And what I've noticed about being, I just miss being out in the open. Since I sold the bike, I'm missing the awareness that comes with being exposed and out in the open. Does that make sense? I talked before about your awareness being bigger, those kind of things. You'll see the intentions can happen straight away. Do I need a fast bike to have this increased awareness? Do I need a good bike? No. They're all kind of like bullshit details. Does that make sense? Okay. So when we put them together, when we get these things working together, what we see is that the goals are there because there are things that you want to participate in, or challenges that you want to meet, or things that you want to undertake, and that's going to result in actions. And those actions are going to boil down to, well, what have I got to learn? Where have I got to go? What skills have I got to bring on board? What skills have I got to learn so that I can make that stuff happen? Does that, you with me? Mm-hmm. Okay. When it comes to intentions, then it's who do I want to be and what do I want to stand for and what do I want to represent whilst I'm doing those actions that we just talked about, which is learning these new skills and those kind of things. That really boils down to attitude rather than action. And so that means what beliefs have I got to change? What prejudices have got to be shifted? Are there mental habits that I need to change as well as physical ones and all those sort of things that go along with me wanting to maintain this kind of cheerful disposition as I go through the various challenges that I'm going to face? And the various challenges are going to be brought on by what are the goals that I set for myself, because no goals, no challenges. Got it? Okay, that's how you can make them work together. Basically, what it boils down to this is intentions really are a way of connecting yourself with your spirit. They are, obviously, they are internally generated, and they are most likely going to be an expression of our values rather than the things that we think would make us more comfortable or whatever that is. So they tend to be expressions of who we really are. They tell us definitely how we want to behave and how we want to be in the world and show up. But what they do is they provide much more motivation than goals themselves will. Because for a goal to motivate you, you've got to get into imagining having it. And that kind of derails it a little bit, because if you imagine it clearly and imagine it well, then it tends to kind of not be needed to be done. But more than anything, what intentions do is create a sense of direction and a sense of purpose. Because we can be living on purpose. In other words, my actions today can be on purpose rather than I find a purpose to subscribe to. So I can live purposefully. Really, what it boils down to is your intentions actually create your reality. You would have heard your perception creates your reality. But a closer, better description is your intentions create your reality. Wayne Dyer said it this way. He said, you cannot always control what goes on outside, but you can always control what goes on inside. And what that means is when Nerida goes traveling, there's no way she can control what's going to happen. But she can control what her reaction is, and her response is, and whether she turns it into a disaster or an opportunity for growth. It's easier when you travel. Does that make sense? It's easier when you travel because you leave a lot of identifying things behind. Got it? But you could turn anything into a success instead of a disaster. You could miss a plane. And the choices are get stressed and dramatized about it, or say to yourself, here's a chance to meditate or write or create or do something beautiful or magical or meet someone new or whatever. You'll create whatever you are going to create, regardless of what it is that just happened, whether that's a missed plane or some exciting thing that happens. When it comes to creating intentions, if we look at what are the steps, then I've got a bunch of steps for you. Those of you at home, get out your pens and paper, because there's four or five steps in this. So the first thing to understand is that what we need to do is spend time in reflection. So creating intentions is not going to happen just because you had a blinding flash walking down the street. Not that that can't happen, but really what we want to do is we want to deliberately turn towards it. The questions you want to ask yourself are, what really matters to me? What's really important in the larger scheme of life as I step out of where I am at the moment? What matters most to me? You might come up with a list. But then ask yourself, well, here I am on the planet. Is there anything that I would like to nurture or to stand for or to represent or to create or to build? Or bring into existence something that doesn't exist at the moment. That could be a family, that could be a business, that could be a house, it could be a structure of some kind, it could be whatever. So creation has no real limits to it. So what would you like to create if you had the opportunity? And then ask yourself, what would I like to let go of? Are there aspects of my personality be good to let go? Is there forgiveness that I would like to practice? Are there events in my past that I would like to let go of? Would I like to let go of the need to win, for example? Or would I like to let go of the need to be right, or all those other things that we talked about? So there could be a list at that point as well. Are there people that would be good for me to forgive because it would be good for me, and they may not even ever find out about it? Of course, if you are going to forgive somebody for something, maybe it's more appropriate to do that face-to-face. You would want to have arrived at forgiveness before you went to talk to them. Don't go to them to get to the point where you forgive them. Do that yourself, because the real gift of forgiveness is a burden that you don't have to carry anymore. So who do you set free when you forgive? You. So there might be a list and might not. What makes you proud? What makes you look at that and go, you know, I did well. I'm really pleased with that. I'm excited about my potential. I'm proud of that and what I did with it, or how my role in whatever that was. And are there words that you want to line up with? You know, are there words that represent what you believe and what you want to produce as your actions in the world? Are there words that you just like those words and you would kind of like to have them as part of the background and how you describe yourself? And are there fears that you would like to release? Remember, what we're talking about here is how you create an intention. Well, a lot of this stuff here, you'll see, is stuff that you could kind of just let go of. So are there fears that you would like to release? If you're kind of making a list now, that's pretty cool. As I'm talking, there are probably things occurring to you. Off to one side, you can kind of write them off to one side and go, okay, I need to get rid of the fear of this or the fear of that or whatever it is. And then what are you grateful for? The reason we want to know what you're grateful for, or the reason you want to know what you're grateful for, is because really what you're grateful for is what you appreciate, what matters to you most. And really, this is really about what matters to you most. You know, that first question, what matters to you most, or what matters most to you, is the key question on that. We're going to move on, though, and we're going to say, okay, how do you really know what matters to you? And the reality is, you just decide. We look for what matters to us, looking for inspiration. But really, we give things meaning, and you can give that meaning and take that meaning away any time that you like. So really what matters to you isn't any more than a collection of opinions, biases, attitudes, and beliefs. What matters to me is that the world is a better place. When I die, I want the world to be a better place because of my existence. I'm pretty sure the world doesn't give a rat's ass about that. It only matters because I say it does. It's just my opinion. But it's something that I can subscribe to because I gave it the meaning, and of course I could take it away as well. So what really matters more than that is directing my efforts in that direction. So if I say, okay, I'm working towards that, then I feel like I'm on purpose. But it was me who made that bullshit up. Because maybe the world would be better off if I did nothing. How do I know that what I'm doing is actually creating some good? Could easily be creating damage. Therefore, what you need to do is have a deep, deep look at what's actually going to bring you more than happiness. In this case, we mean fulfillment and satisfaction and contentment. That is going to take some time. That's something that you need to be with over a period of time, not just kind of do one meditation and go, I think I got it, or what most people do, which is, I don't think I got anything out of that. Or even worse, that didn't do anything for me. It's not meant to do something for you, it's meant to do something so that you can find out what you need to know. So I'm just going to leave you with one bottom line on that. You can't overdose on meditation. Have any of you met someone who says, my biggest problem in life is I meditate too much? Probably you'd say someone like the Dalai Lama would be up there in terms of how much they meditate. And he's not saying I'm doing it too much. He's saying I need to get better at it and I need to do more of it. So we could probably take that as a bit of a direction.